Well, Amy, it is just so easy to focus on only the negative aspects of menopause, isn't
Well, because it's mostly negative, right? No,
it?
I'm just kidding. We're doing something different today, right?
We are, but I do think it's important that we acknowledge a couple things. First of all, we have experienced some negative aspects to menopause. So, if you had to pick like the top three things of perimenopause slash menopause that have been less than stellar, what would you pick?
Well, the top one for me, and I think maybe for you too, is the sleeplessness. Oh
Mm-hmm.
my heavens, I've really had a hard time with that. So, in Exhale, we write about the 2:37 a.m. club. And, some of that is angst,
Yes.
but some of that is perimenopause. And so, so that's probably the number one thing. And then number two, just not being able to, I feel like I can't count on my body. In a lot of ways, like it's not reliable in so many ways right now. And then, it probably just the emotional stuff. Like it's not every day of the month, but there are a few days of the month. I think I mentioned I want to kill people. So, that's kind of disconcerting. How about you, Sherry?
Well, I have always been a 237 gal. So like for me, and I now looking back, I recognize that to have been anxiety that just I didn't have a name for when I was younger, but it was definitely exacerbated by hot flashes. People say hot flashes, but that's just a misnomer because flash like implies that it's here and then it's gone. Like,
Quickly.
like a flash of lightning. How long does a flash take? You could use a stopwatch. What, 1 second, 2 seconds? I'm like, nobody warned me about the hot 10 to 15 minutes of
Right.
soaking in one's own sweat. For me, the reason, and I am gratefully over this, mostly over this, but there was a period of about a year there when it was like, all right, I'm just getting up and taking a shower. Yes, at 2:37 in the morning, I'm taking a bath in bed, so I might as well get up and actually take a shower, which would then potentially cool me down. But yeah, that was very, very exciting. The quote unquote hot flashes. And then I agree on the not being able to count on the body, but boy, for me, it was not being able to count on my brain. Nerdy, wordy girl here.
Ooh, yeah.
It was very bizarre. And trust me, I'm really not returning to my perfectionistic days, but I have always been the kind of person for whom the difference between there and there and it's and two, two and two, it just came out of my fingers accurately. And I'm not saying that made me a better person or anything like that, but for about 2 years in there, I would look at the page and go, that's the wrong spelling of two. I know the difference. And I just started, they just come started coming out wrong. And then I would look back at something I'd written the day before and I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. Like I chose the wrong words to express myself. And that was very disconcerting. I'm like, especially since I have Alzheimer's on both sides, I have on the maternal and paternal sides of my family. Like it was scary.
I've had that too. The brain fog is for real.
And then, we just won't even talk about emotions. We will not talk about mood swings or emotion, big emotions, small emotions, combined emotions. Ah, yes.
Well, it's all lovely. Okay, let's think about getting to the good stuff.
Okay, so what we want to do is we do want to be really clear that these next two episodes, we are going to be talking about menopause, but we're not talking necessarily about the physical aspects. So we're not going to be talking about things like hormone replacement or how to solve the night sweats. We are going to be talking much more about the emotional and developmental and spiritual aspects of perimenopause and menopause. But then Amy came up with a brilliant idea. So Amy, tell them what we're going to be doing in a future season.
Well, I have an amazing gynecologist, And she has agreed to an interview in January that will address all your questions about the medical slash physical part of menopause. So this is a two-parter. We're excited.
Yes. So we've saved the questions that had to do with the physical aspects. So we just want to make sure that everybody is clear as we go into this episode, what it is and what it isn't about. And I'm excited because we've started out by kind of talking about some of the negatives, but...
Oh, yeah, the gift part is coming. So don't skip this because it turns out there's some amazing gifts attached to menopause.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're talking with Cheryl Bridges Johns, author of 7 Transforming Gifts of Menopause, An Unexpected Spiritual Journey. Cheryl is the Robert E. Fisher Professor of Spiritual Renewal at the Pentecostal Theological Seminary. She helped her husband, Jackie, plant a church where they served for 27 years. They have 2 daughters and 5 grandchildren. The Johns have a small farm where they raise Dexter cattle and blueberries.
Menopause is a dramatic but largely overlooked developmental window to the second half of life. Although today's women are more aware of and actively involved in mapping their menopausal journey than generations before, many still do not see menopause as a time of important psychological and spiritual transformation.
This book goes far beyond hot flashes and gets to the very heart of the midlife journey, helping women to find their unique voice and speak their truth in an era of hashtag me too and hashtag church too. Coming alongside readers as a wise spiritual guide, pastor and theologian Cheryl Bridges Johns identifies 7 key developmental tasks of menopause and gives practical ways women can embrace each one. She encourages women to view these tasks as gifts as they experience the remarkable physical, emotional, and spiritual transformation that occurs at this stage of life.
Written in a warm and conversational tone, this book helps women chart a course for the future, leading them to a renewed sense of identity, a more focused vision for life, and a deeper spirituality. Each chapter includes guided questions for personal reflection and study questions for group discussion.
So tell us, what led you to write a book about this important but not often talked about topic of menopause?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is going through the experience myself and having somewhat of a rough ride with it, that I remember my husband and I were riding in the car and I said, I think when all of this time is over, I'm going to see it as a gift. And he said, well, maybe you should write a book about that. So I did. And then I had for years been doing studies in human development and particular women's development, women's studies, and looking at the unique ways women go through the life journey. And so many times that unique journey is not addressed appropriately. And so I wanted to help women to see that there's this built-in, what we sometimes call developmental window, that I think God has given us to grow and develop into more mature, wise women.
This is, sounds goofy, but it's a gift to start to see it as a gift because it is difficult.
All right. So I like that concept of it being a developmental window. So how is menopause a built-in developmental window for women to discover meaning and purpose for that second half of life?
Yeah. You know, we're never static. We grow. The lifespan is until death. And each stage of life presents what sometimes psychologists call developmental tasks. And we forget about that. I think we assume that when we become adults, at least mid-30s, 40s, that we're sort of static. We know that we age, but don't understand that there's some real radical transformation yet ahead. But you can look at child development theories, and we talk about all of those developmental tasks that children have to go through, learning to walk, learning to run. In adolescence, Eric Erickson talked about developing self-identity and so forth. But for women, I believe that we don't recognize the developmental window that God provides during perimenopause and menopause to maybe shed some things of the past and then to take up some new things for the future. And for centuries, it's been a very difficult subject for women. I talk about this some in the book, but the prejudice against older women, prejudice against postmenopausal women, the witch trials in the 14th through the 17th centuries were pretty rough on older women, especially older women with power. And even into the 20th century, it was still common to say that menopause was the death of the woman and the woman. Mm. Well, that's horrible to say. Well, you kind of lose your ability to bear children, wow. and therefore you lose a lot of your youthfulness and worthiness, so to speak. And what good is a woman then after that? It was assumed that her mind wasn't as good, that she was sort of all worn out, the old gray mare kind of thing. So the death of the woman in the woman, I tried to reframe that into the birth of the woman in the woman. And yeah, there are some things that die, the capacity to have children, all of that we need to mourn. But then development is wonderful. It's okay, now what's coming? There's new things coming. And I call them gifts, these wonderful developmental tasks that I see as just gifts to women.
You talk about this shift in perspective. So how can women find the courage to move beyond the spiritual holding containers from the first half of their life?
That chapter, I identify these seven gifts and or seven developmental tasks. And one of the gifts I identify is the gift of spiritual freedom. And again, it's as if we are to be static. And that was the hardest chapter to write, this gift of spiritual freedom, because I think women are given spiritual holding containers. And Richard Rohr talks about this a lot, about holding containers. And they are good because without parameters of holding containers, we would not know who we are. We wouldn't know our tradition. We wouldn't know what we believe. So as children, especially, and young people, we need good, safe holding containers. But they can get pretty tight. And then I think for women, it's sort of like, well, here's a holding container we want to give you in your early 20s, and you're supposed to live and die in it. And let's have some women's conferences on bloom where you're planted. And, you know, she made the most of the space given her. How many times have I heard that? Yeah. What I'm trying to do is help women say, that first part of life may have been good and wonderful, affirm that, but what might be some ways in which God is calling you to step out of those holding containers? Like, you've always been this and you've always done this, but what if there's a new calling of another space, a vision that's larger than the one that you've just been given? And what if God actually calls you to step out into some uncharted space? And I try to help women walk out of that space faithfully to scripture and to themselves with courage. And I'm like, I'm standing here at baggage claim. You're leaving that first half of life with a lot of baggage. And you're looking out and there are all these people standing there at baggage claim with signs that say, I'll be your spiritual guide. Well, some of these women are in their early 30s and 40s, and that's fine. But what I want to say is I've got some roads under my belt and I'm standing here with my sign saying, I'll be your spiritual guide into this second half of life and help you go through this process of moving into maybe new space, uncharted space with faith and courage. And besides that, God's spirit is with us. And sometimes God's spirit, actually the word there where the spirit drove Jesus into the wilderness, the emphasis there in the Greek is, and the spirit shoved him into the wilderness or pushed him. Wow. And I feel like menopause, perimenopause is a spiritual shoving, pushing, a wake up call that the holding containers you have felt comfortable in, if you stay, you may stagnate. You never stay the same. You either grow or stagnate, but you don't have the choice of just staying the same. And I think too many women are updated versions of their younger selves. Wow. They're older versions, just updated the software kind of thing, you know, rather than they might need some kind of radical transformation. And the things that happen to our body and our brain during perimenopause, we're just primed for that change.
That's good news. I mean, that's good news that God has physically wired us for a new and exciting season. And that's good news.
You know, as you're talking about the holding containers, I'm thinking about repotting a plant that's become root bound to the point that, you know, like fungus has grown mm-hmm. and it is going to die. And I don't have a green thumb. I have a black thumb, but you know, I've seen that happen. And then as you're saying that we might need radical change, my first thought, which Amy and I will talk about when we do our second episode here, is don't I owe it to everybody who knows me to stay the same? Don't I owe it to my family to stay the same? Don't I owe it to my friends to stay the same? Don't I owe it to my church to stay the same? You don't have to answer that one, but that was the first thing that came to mind. How dare I?
Step out of a holding container that somebody else made for me, ooh. Right? I mean, anyway, that's a whole, we could go a long ways down that road, I think.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So in an early chapter in your book, Seven Transforming Gifts of Menopause, it's titled The Gift of Anger.
Oh, yeah.
And so my first thought was, well, that's an oxymoron right there. Gift and anger. How can that go together? Mm-hmm. And you introduced me to a brand new term that's been running through my head, perimenopausal anger. So first of all, what is perimenopausal anger? And second, talk to us about how anger can possibly be a gift.
Yeah, that was the last chapter. I added it sort of at the very end. And I'm glad that I added that chapter. Perimenopausal anger, or sometimes it's called perimenopausal rage, happens when, you know, you've got this lovely wash of hormones that happens to women during puberty. You've got sort of this dance that goes on with estrogen and progesterone. It's the nesting syndrome, the feel good, and, you know, the authority on this time. Christiane Northrup, I used a lot of her work. She's a physician specializing in this. It's the kind of thing that causes women to almost get drugged. I hate to say that. It's like we're drugged at puberty with this feel-good sense of I want to nurture, I want to nest, and the ability to let things go. I'll just put that aside. I'll let it go. We have a remarkable capacity in this first part of our journey to sort of brush things aside and let things go. But at perimenopause, that balance there in that lovely dance of progesterone and estrogen gets all out of whack. And you get sometimes rise in estrogen and drops in progesterone. And what happens is the rose-colored glasses come off and you're no longer drugged, so to speak. And you go, I let that go. I did that. I overlooked that, because things never disappear. They go down into the caverns of our psyche. Deep down in there, they're still there. And when this hormonal stuff in our brain gives way, the things that you buried come back, and sometimes in vivid ways, and almost like you don't have the anger. The anger has you. Women who have experienced trauma in their earlier life are more likely to experience this sort of uncontrollable anger and rage. And it's a time to not hate yourself, or it's a time to be gentle with yourself, knowing that, for one thing, anger is legitimate. It's something that's telling you you need to pay attention to things, because when things get buried, they fester. And when things fester, they make you sick. The whole system of our psyche and our body and everything gets out of whack. And the more we repress, the worse it is on our body. And so this anger that's always been there, maybe we were abused, or maybe our husband left us, or maybe this happened, or we lost this job unfairly, and we think, well, I'm a good Christian woman. I'm going to pray about that and let it go. It doesn't go away. It just kind of gets stored up. And that's probably good, but it's a cumulative thing. And the bill collector comes calling and says, okay, we got to deal with this now. And that's why I advise in this chapter for women to find a therapist, and maybe even some good antidepressants and hormone therapy that's balanced to give us assistance in that period of time. There's no shame in that.
Do you find that women are blindsided by this?
Yeah, I think we are, because we don't talk about this period of time, even in our generation. You know, we can talk about everything. You know, people talk about things today that I think, well, might not I would just talk about all this in public, you know, but we still don't talk about menopausal anger, and we still stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And the angry menopausal sweating woman, you know, and out of control screaming, well, that may happen, but that's not all that bad. And preparing ourselves, like if someone's listening to this who's in their 30s or 40s, early 40s or so, it's good to say, okay, I may be prone to this. And if you had serious PMS and maybe pretty bad postpartum depression, then you want to prepare for perimenopause. Just go ahead and prepare for that in ways that would say, okay, I'm going to probably get more depressed and I'm going to have more anxiety during this time. Mm. I may have a lot of anger. So I want to go ahead and shore up my life as before I go into that. And, you know, my book, just reading ahead, it's okay for a woman past menopause to read my book can be helpful because we're never static and things that you didn't deal with, you can still deal with at the age of 70. Mm. But also, these are good things to look at and deal with in your 30s and 40s in the sense that I don't want to wait to where I'm desperate and I want to kind of be proactive. I guess it's the word mm-hmm. proactive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just feel like everything you're saying can take so much shame and so much isolation out of the experience, because if we think, well, it's just me and I'm losing my mind, then we're going to try to white knuckle it through. But to realize that actually there are very valid chemical reasons opens up all sorts of possibilities.
Yeah. And you don't find many support groups for women going through this.
Mm.
Absolutely. In the chapter on the gift of spiritual freedom, you encourage women to embrace non-dualistic thinking. So tell us what non-dualistic thinking is and why should we embrace it and how do we do that?
Yeah, dualistic thinking is a capacity we get pretty early in life and we hone that skill in our cognitive development and what the psychologist Jean Piaget called concrete thinking. And then we move into more abstract formal operational thinking. And that has two stages. One is called dichotomizing thinking. And that's the 13-year-old, 14-year-old who knows everything and you know nothing. They make great debate team members and, you know, let's go at it. Here's creation. Here's evolution. Here's democracy. And we can nuance to the differences. And this is like this, and this is dissimilar. It's an important skill of thought to categorize and to systematize. But then around the age of 16 or even younger, we begin to develop the capacity to think about thinking in a way that it's not so cut and dry and black and white. So that one could say the opposite of a profound truth is another profound truth. Now, if you've just got dichotomizing thinking, you go, what did you just say? The opposite of a truth is falsehood, but not always. Another profound truth can be the opposite of a profound truth. And Apostle Paul was sort of the master at dialectical thinking. He would say, I'm living, but yet I'm dying. And it is, you know, becoming all things to all people. And it's the particular and the general together. It is to lose your life in order to gain your life. And all of these kinds of things that are part of being a mature Christian. Education, especially in the last 40 or 50 years in the States in particular, when we went to all of the back to basic stuff, we didn't do a lot of education for dialectical thought. Therefore, I think a lot of adults today have parts of their brain that sort of have atrophy. We don't use a lot of dialectical thought on everyday activities. You don't need that to balance your checkbook or whatever. But to go into some of the deeper mysteries of life and to into spiritual maturity, you've got to lay aside some of that black and white dichotomizing thought and go beyond the sound bites that come out of that into it is both and. Women have been rewarded for not thinking dialectically because it's, okay, here is the woman's place and here's the man's place or whatever, and that's dichotomizing thinking. And often dialectical thought asks, what if we put this together and this together? I know they've never been put together, but there might be a synergy or creative energy in that synthesis there. And to go outside of boxes of thought and move in sometimes leaps of thought and bring this person in the room with this person. And what can we learn from each of them rather than I'm just going to be with people in my box, back to the holding containers. people just like me, I'm more comfortable with that. And I will share this Facebook meme because it's my group's meme. This is my truth. This is my world. And for women to go outside of that, it is more difficult. Historically, women have been denied higher education and the opportunity to develop the skills of dialectical thought and embrace paradox in ways that living and growing and developing causes us to be forced to embrace paradox. But suffering and joy, we live long enough, we learn perhaps how to embrace that. That's a paradox. Mm. That's dialectical thought. I'm suffering, but I have great joy. Mm-hmm. So I just think that for women to mature, it's important to learn the skill of dialectical thinking, to push some boundaries and to say, what if?
Hmm. That resonates a great deal. And especially for Amy, who's very much been going through that journey herself.
Very much. Yeah. Well, and I think your picture of social media, that was immediately what I thought of, that we're living in such divisive times. And I think it reflects a real lack of being able to put ourselves in someone else's shoes or consider a possibility that has never been part of our lives before. Mm-hmm. And so it's super important what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, our listeners gave us a ton of really great questions. And so we're just going to focus on a couple that deal with the emotional and spiritual impact of menopause. So this is one that both Amy and I have dealt with and we heard from our listeners. I was unprepared for the sleeplessness. I feel more sleep deprived now than I did when I was nursing a newborn and chasing a toddler. So how do I embrace the gift of my authentic self while my memory, my vocabulary, and my reasoning skills are taking such a nosedive?
Yeah. Well, you just don't embrace that gift yet. That's why I have that first gift as the gift of just uncovering or the gift of deconstruction. And you just got to lean into that storm. But while you're leaning into it, it's not a time to maybe look for your vision or your authentic self as much as just listening to your body. Mm. What's my body saying? It's experiencing too much anxiety. Maybe I've been programmed to go on overdrive and live my life as if this hyper overdrive life is normal. And now my body is saying, no, anxiety attacks are saying, this is not normal. What are they trying to tell us about how we are living? And in some ways, I think COVID-19 might be a good metaphor because it is a way in which we were forced to slow down and to maybe take a breath and to pull out of public space and a harried life of taking our kids from one soccer practice to game to this to travel tournament to that and never have to slow down. So the things that happen in our body during perimenopause are sort of like our body saying, I'm shedding some stuff here. And I'm also letting you know, I need your attention. I need you to look at me, the body. I've been your friend. I've been with you through childbearing. I've been with you through all this. But right now, just look at me, your body, and what's your body saying? Mm. So for instance, in my time, the night sweats and the sleeplessness and anxiety, I relied a lot on this integrated medicine physician that I went to who gave me a bit of Lunesta to help me sleep. And then the compounded hormones I took helped with the night sweats. Mm. You don't want to over-medicate. You don't want to kill the messenger, but you want to at least level out enough to say, okay, now, how can I listen to my body here and give my body more sleep, more rest? How can I not put so much stress on my system? What do I need to shed? As my body is shedding, what do I need to shed in my lifestyle? Let go of. Be kind at that time to yourself. The book that came out shortly after mine, The Try Softer by Andy Kobler, has been very helpful. I've just been reading through it. In other words, we've been programmed to try harder, to do with more time management. Just if I manage my time better, well, it might not be that we need to manage our time better. It might be that we just need less harried activity. So just be soft with our own body, soft with ourselves, gentle with ourselves. God is gentle, right? And I had this image during this time of being wrapped by the wings of the Spirit and being held And that sense of, I'm just going into this cocoon for a while in order to shed some things, and then be prepared, though, for the time of the rebirth, the vision, the self. But there is a time of deconstruction where we don't need to say, okay, now what's my vision for the second half of life, or how am I going to find my authentic self? You just need to ride the storm. Just let it blow on you and ride it out. I like to body surf. And the best thrill is getting the wave at the right time and then riding that to shore. And I think that's what we have to do.
Powerful.
Cheryl, what closing words do you have to motivate our listeners who want to embrace the transforming gifts of menopause?
The last chapter of the book is the gift of courage. And that's a hard thing to have sometimes. But courage is not the absence of fear. It's the ability to go ahead even with the fear and to tap into that younger, courageous self, maybe that got lost down in those caverns of our psyche. So it's a time to not withdraw and to wither into, there's a delicate balance of going into a cocoon, and then you've got to be careful that you don't go into a tomb and you just withdraw. I've seen women, and I talk about this in the book, precious women who've had so much complex trauma in their lives that when this bill collector came, it just seemed to take everything. And they ended up on disability and other things. So what I would suggest is prepare for it, find support, read my book and other books that would help, and know that it's like, you know, when you prepare, if you've had a child for labor and delivery, you know that you're going into something rough, but it's going to be very good. And you just do all that you can to help yourself move into that time and space. And know that there's beautiful stuff on the other side. And also, you're not alone. You may feel God forsaken, literally. But God is there in a different way. Maybe not to rescue you from the storm, but just to be with you in that time.
We hope you've enjoyed episode number 207 of Grit and Grace, the podcast.
Listeners, we're so grateful that you can join us each and every week.
And we're so grateful to Brazos Press for their sponsorship of this week's episode.
Check out the webpage at gritandgracethepodcast.com/episode207. There you'll find this week's transcript, a link to order 7 Transforming Gifts of Menopause, an Unexpected Spiritual Journey, and a link to Cheryl's website.
Join us next week when we'll be processing what we've learned from our conversation with Cheryl.
For today, grow your grit.
Embrace God's grace.
And as God reveals the next step to live your one life well,
we'll be cheering you on. So take it.
Listeners, we're incredibly grateful that you enjoy it. That you enjoy us each and every week. Let me try that. Listeners, we hope you enjoy us each and every week. Listeners, we're so grateful that you can join us.